And it's one of the funniest.
The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We have two bills today. We're not going to work either one, so if people are waiting to hear us vote, you probably shouldn't. And I think what we'll do, because we have a senator here, Zach, maybe open a public hearing on SB 437. Zach, tell us about the bill.
So Bill 437 expands public records disclosure exemption to records. Communication and information received by counties and cities in connection with applications for economic development monies, support, or assistance.
Senator.
Thank you, Co-Chair Bence and members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Monas-Anderson. I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. I'm delighted to be here and bring forward Senate Bill 437. This was actually a request from the city of Gresham, and basically it just extends to cities and counties the same privilege that the state and ports have under statute for confidentiality and economic development-related projects. When businesses, we are wooing a lot of businesses to our local cities and jurisdictions. We want industry to come to our localities. And when we're in the wooing stage or the courting stage, it's extremely important for the information that those industries share with the cities to be held confidential. Just because we had a case of Boeing wanting to expand, and it was in an enterprise zone, and they didn't really want other competitors to know what they were doing or why they were wanting to expand. But if there had been a public records request, the city of Gresham would have had to turn over that information to the public. And there is a case in New Mexico where actually an industry was looking at locating in a particular area, and it got out as to the media about the incentives, and they withdrew immediately. And so it is a protection, and I feel it is extremely important that when local jurisdictions are attracting businesses to their locale, that at least in the pre-application, and this is only the pre-application stage, that information be held confidential. Once they submit an application, then it's okay. Everything will have to become public, and so there will be public hearings, an open hearing process, et cetera. So that's basically what the bill does, and you'll have super smart people coming to talk to you about the details.
Thank you. Questions for the senator? I just have one. Was the just the one city came to you and asked? I know so we have a number of letters from here.
Oh, yes. The city of Gresham came to me, but there's Hillsborough, and a lot. This is extremely important to a number of cities in the state, and I think they will have that.
And one other. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Lindsay.
Oh, I don't mean to cut you off.
Oh well, then I do have one other question. The I noticed a number of folks didn't vote for the bill in the Senate. Can you share with us what the debate was?
I was talking to Senator George saying, oh, Lori, this bill should move, but I'm going to vote no because I'm just being cantankerous.
So, I think he was joined by a few others.
Yes, they are. There are. I know that Senator Haas says he will be opposed to any public withholding any public. He doesn't want to have any limitations on the public records law. Everything should be open. Everything should be transparent.
Right. I say it was an odd mix.
It was a very odd
votes.
Mix, yeah. And for different reasons.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Lindsay.
You asked my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll note that there also might be a connection between my senator's no vote and his former occupation as a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you had any opportunity to think about the arrangements that take place now without this arrangement. How do cities and jurisdictions deal with the current situation such that they can make it through a pre-application?
They have to be very secretive. I think that the cities will be able to explain that much much better on the process that they use to try to keep it very low key when they're out recruiting businesses to come to their areas.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Yes.
Well, a comment, Mr. Chair. I spent some time on the City Council in Springfield, and during that period of time, we had a big employer who was looking at Springfield, who was called the Big Fish at that point, you know, as a code name. And it was challenging to, and I didn't actually even know who it was as a city councilor. We just talked about the Big Fish constantly. So it was very challenging to keep everything under wraps.
See, for competition anyway, businesses many times do not want their competitors to know that they are thinking about expanding or relocating. I mean, that's huge because there may be areas they just want to see what are the incentives that they will get. Is it a good fit for their industry? And so I think that pre-application phase is really important to be able to keep that information from the public records.
Further questions? I just have one more, and I noticed that the bill itself not only expands the groups that would be afforded the protection, but it also includes grants and then economic development money support or assistance. Did anybody comment on that as being okay? So that's great. Okay, thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you very much for hearing the bill. Consider it very seriously.
We will. And with that, we have three folks signed up, Ron Papsdorf and Hannes and Jack Isselman, if you could come up. Who would like to go first?
Oh, okay. Good afternoon, Chair Vance, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Papsdorf representing the city of Gresham. Appreciate the comments from Senator Monta Sanderson. Thanks for hearing the bill today. As Senator Monta Sanderson said, and I won't repeat all of our testimony because she hit the highlights, but it is just an extension of that confidentiality privilege that the state and ports already enjoy around economic development projects. I think I'll spend most of my time hitting some of the answers to the questions that you've received and giving some examples of why this is important. Cities and counties over the years have become more and more involved in the economic development process and business recruitment process, dealing with existing companies that want to expand and grow in our communities, as well as recruiting new businesses in. Lots of leads come through the state Economic Development Agency, Business Oregon, and then to cities and counties. There have been arguments made that the confidentiality that the state enjoys then extends to the cities once they're feeding projects to the cities and engaging the cities or counties in those conversations. One, that has not been tested ever, so we don't know that that's true for a fact. Two, there are many, many leads, either existing companies that want to grow in cities or counties or companies coming in that come directly to the city or county and don't come through that state process. And in that case, we don't have the protection of this information. Companies that we deal with on a day-to-day basis are very sensitive to their information coming out too early when they're first exploring expansion or location opportunities and options. They have both competitive issues with their competitors, knowing kind of what their plans may be, but also there's some real implications for them. I mean, if you're a landowner and you have a piece of property that's for sale, and all of a sudden you find out that company Behemoth is interested in your piece of property or interested in expanding in your city, all of a sudden the price of that land goes way, way up. So there are some real implications for information, particularly a company name, getting out too early in the process. The other thing that we believe that this helps is making sure that the company is comfortable providing us a full disclosure of information about their company, about their project early on. Really helps us make an informed and effective decision about whether or not to extend any sort of incentive package to that company. And we think that actually benefits the community and the state in order for us to make a good informed decision about whether or not we should be extending or to what extent we ought to be extending any incentive packages to that particular company. Finally, as the Senator said, once a project progresses, they've submitted real applications, going through a development process before there's actually decisions made, kind of the non-proprietary information, the non-protected information, the non-trade secret sort of information does become public, and there is a public deliberation that's able to occur kind of once that process has proceeded to further along down the road. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony and just say that we would urge your positive support for the bill, and thank you for the hearing today.
Thank you. Ann.
My name is Ann Hannes. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and the League of Oregon Cities also asked that I speak on their behalf. We both support this bill because we see more and more that cities and counties are actively involved with economic development recruiting, and the time frames are getting shorter, and it's getting much more competitive to be able to respond quickly. We're also seeing that when cities and counties, for example, are sponsors of enterprise zones, and in those enterprise zones, we need to have assurance from the companies that they're going to be able to meet their goals, job goals, salary goals, and that may require that we have to look at confidential data in order to have that assurance. I want to emphasize that this still requires that cities and counties would have to hold public hearings prior to the final approval of any kind of incentive that might be granted to companies. In response to one of the questions that was raised earlier about how do cities and counties handle this information now, I talked to Sarah Garrison, who is head of economic development for Hillsboro, and she also used to be the state business development officer. And she said it makes her job a whole lot more challenging without this kind of assurance, because what she has to do is carry all this information in her head. And if you're taught, you know, rather than writing it down, because she's concerned about not wanting to have that jeopardize any kind of economic development that might take place. And she's been involved with some of the major recruitments over the past couple years. So with that, I would urge your support of Senate Bill 437, because I think this will allow us to be able to work well with the state, and also still it provides for that public openness at the end for the non-proprietary information prior to making any decision on an incentive on the local level.
Thank you.
Chair Benz, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Esselman appearing today on behalf of the Oregon Economic Development Association, representing Oregon's economic development professionals and communities throughout Oregon. We support the bill for the reasons that have already been stated. I'll just say briefly, our past president, Renata Mengelberg, I know, has submitted a letter to your committee in support of the bill. She is now the economic development manager in the city of Canby. And if she were here today, I think she'd tell you one of the most challenging aspects of her job is the judgment that she's required to utilize in managing a scarce resource of economic development incentives that are at her disposal and making sure they get utilized to create the maximum return in her community. The passage of this bill will help professionals like Renata get access to better information more quickly. Today, when incentives are awarded, a lot of financial data and other data is received in advance. The process, as Mr. Papsdorf mentioned, in part, is to have that information come through the state. The state enjoys this protection and then is shared with the local official. And we're not supposing that collaboration end, but with the advent of more modern communication techniques and direct marketing by local communities, leads are being generated less and less at the state level and more at the local level, so the initial intake is happening at the local level. And this would add a level of convenience, but also an important level of enhanced response time to responding to inquiries from companies. As was previously stated, there are no secret incentives. When incentives are ultimately awarded, that is all public record and typically the outcome of a public process. What we are asking, what we are seeking here, is protection that would occur at the front end during the evaluation phase prior to the awarding of any incentives. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Looking at the vote count in the Senate, do we have anybody here in the Senate committee? Do we have anybody here from who is going to be testifying on this bill, not on the pro side? To understand that,
this is it so far.
This is everybody. It's probably fair to you to try to characterize that view. Feel free if you'd like, but I'll try to. It sounds like you want to.
Well, I just want to. Chair Benz, Representative Smith, I just want to bring you up to speed. You weren't here when Senator Montes Anderson put on the record that Senator George was cantankerous.
Right.
So I just wanted to make sure that
Mr.
was...
Mr. Chair, by the
So, no. I can report the dialogue at the Senate committee was more around the nature of incentives. It kind of got beyond the scope of this bill and about incentives and, whether certain incentives should be awarded. So I think some of the opposition from members of that committee was in a broader direction, not necessarily at the target we're pointing at with this bill.
So, Mr. Chair,
please.
I guess, and I'd be most interested to try to find perspective from this, in addition to those advocating for the bill to help evaluate, and maybe that only will come from us. A question I guess I would have for the committee members is: are there other alternatives beyond another exemption to the public records rule to help encourage, help allow for, like a time limited, like during a blank period, some other alternative? This makes me kind of nervous, and I would hope that we might try to find some judgment on this that was disinterested as well as the really valuable testimony we've already received.
Further questions, Representative Lindsay first, then Co-Chair Reed. No, Co-Chair Reed.
I was just going to ask Representative Smith if he had any suggestions.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think about.
A couple of questions. The I think you mentioned, Jack, that I think you used the word most of the time there's going to be a public hearing, and I'm kind of interested in that qualifier, most of the time.
You want to?
Chair Benz, I can answer that. In the case of Gresham's Enterprise Zone, for instance, there are certain applications. If a company is applying for the extended five-year abatement through the Enterprise Zone program, there's a hearing required through our city council and an application process. If a company is applying for the three-year Enterprise Zone abatement, there's not a public hearing required through the city council, although there is a public application that's required. It's an administrative process, but at that point, once they formally file the application and the decision is being made through the administrative process, it is public. It is disclosable at that point. So while it's not a formal public hearing at the city council, it is a publicly open decision-making process. That's kind of the distinction on our end under that example under the Enterprise Zone program.
Yes, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That actually just kind of stimulates the a further sort of clarification on that. Is that the way you described that? It was on Gresham. Is that true in all cities and other jurisdictions, or just for you?
Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, I don't know if that applies to all enterprise zones or if that's how we particularly administer ours.
Maybe Ms. Hannes, you have a thought on that?
I don't know. I would have to find out response to that.
That'd be helpful.
I would like to go to I'm familiar with generally with how this works, and I'm just trying to think of if there have been any situations where the lack of this particular protection created a problem. Now, you're alluding to some that did, and the thought is, I think from one of the letters here from the Portland Development Commission, that it says the Portland Business Journal reported PDC had conversations with the company. The information was then obtained by the Business Journal, and then the company left. And is that a description of the only problem this is trying to address? Is that it? Because I'm just curious about the scope of what we're about.
I'll take it. First cut. Chair Benz, I think that's a good example of the risks that exist in the current system, with cities and counties not having the ability to hold some of that information in confidence when they're talking to companies. Companies are truly sensitive to this. We had Boeing come through our enterprise zone process, for instance. Well over a $200 million expansion of their Gresham facility. They're hiring upwards of 300 new employees. But it was a project for a service that they would provide to Boeing globally, where the Gresham facility was competing against other vendors and other sites, other Boeing facilities throughout the world. And so to one extent, Boeing wants to kind of keep confidential that they're looking at that kind of expansion for that kind of facility in relation to we're getting out to their competitors, their global competitors. But also, I think it helps the local jurisdictions. If a competing jurisdiction that had another facility, another Boeing facility that might be competing for the same work, found out that Boeing was looking at our site for that expansion, it gives that other jurisdiction the opportunity to kind of undercut. And then you get into this constant kind of undercutting process. Well, we can do better than that. We can do better than that. Rather than each jurisdiction being able to talk to the company, put their best foot forward, have an open conversation about what they are or are not able to do, and let the company make that decision without kind of this artificial competition happening between jurisdictions that doesn't benefit any of us.
Other states' position on this, have any of you checked to see if this public records exemption exists, let's say, in Washington? I'm just curious.
Yeah, Chair Benz, I have not I have not specifically checked any other states, although I am aware that other states do, and I can't tell you with specificity which states do, but it is common that other states extend an exemption to their public records law for these types of financial and trade secret records that come in the recruitment process, the economic development recruitment process.
What I would like to have you address is the damage that this does to the public if the exception is extended. What is it that the society suffers from as a result of this? The example I'm thinking of kind of goes like this. Public groups engage in negotiation. They reach agreement. When it finally becomes public, it's a done deal. And all the hearings are as a rubber stamp of a deal already made. And so folks out in the public go, what the heck? We've been brought to the table way too late, had we only known. And there's been lots of stuff that's been discussed without any chance of our having weighed in. And now it's too late. Have I described the problem that folks opposed to the exception might describe it if they were here? Or am I missing it?
Chair Benz, members of the committee, I suppose we'd offer that because folks aren't signed up to oppose the bill, there's not a lot of opposition. But I guess some safeguards are, A, the folks who approve the incentives are typically elected officials like yourself, so presumably they're not going to bring industries to their community that aren't going to be in keeping with the interests of their voters, but that certainly could happen. So what are the other safeguards? Well, I mean, really, from a practical standpoint, what happens here is the information is protected. The local officials work on evaluating it. They don't do a deal because based on the information they get, it's not worth an incentive. So, and that happens a fair amount of time where a deal doesn't happen, so no public incentive or money has been expended beyond the time, of course, of the public officials in evaluating it. Option B is they do move forward, and that is part of a public application process. Members of the public are able to come in, comment on that, where there is a public comment opportunity in areas where there's applications and incentives are awarded. And those are typically lower dollar. I mean, the bigger the dollars, so if we're talking about a strategic investment program type of investment, there's typically a number of public hearings required, and the public has large opportunities for input. With smaller incentives, the smaller the incentive, obviously, the more administrative the processing is of that. But I would submit to you, if local officials embark on a pattern of awarding incentives that either don't pan out or are otherwise objectionable to the community, the ballot box is the recourse to that.
Thank you. Other questions for the panel?
Just a quick comment. While I'm always glad to have written testimony from the Portland Development Commission, in case they're confused, and maybe it was addressed to someone else, my last name is spelled R-E-A-D.
Helpful, thank you. Yes, Representative Lindsay.
One more question, Jack. On you said that I think this somewhat originated from City of Hillsboro, at least the economic developer there. Can you explain a little bit more of the origination? What's the true genesis of this idea?
Chair Bentz, Representative Lindsay, the bill actually was brought forward by Gresham, although Hillsboro is supportive of the bill, and I think the impetus of it in part was the Boeing situation that Senator Montes Anderson referenced.
Chair Reed, Representative Lindsay, I mean, that's true. The idea came forward from the City of Gresham at the request of our economic development staff. We've been actively involved in business expansion and recruitment efforts over the last 5 years. I think there's just been some concern on their part about their comfort level in dealing with some of these companies and the ability to hold information confidential for those companies during those initial exploratory conversations with those companies. And again, administering our enterprise zone program, Boeing's the biggest example, but we've had five or six kind of local companies expanding, working through that process that shared similar concerns. But we're actively involved in large business recruitment efforts as well.
I, too, would be interested in the briefest of catalogs of what other states do around this. That would be valuable. I'd be interested in hearing about what alternatives might be. I mean, could you have it that under the discretion of blank that something could be held in, that this could be more done as discretionary rather as all the time? That might not be a good option, but I'd be interested in options. And then a question. The intention is, as I understand it, to get our economic incentive devices, to get our economic incentive tools to be used more often. Have we considered, because it doesn't look like there's a fiscal impact or a revenue impact on the bill, have we considered if we're more successful at getting people to use our economic development sort of tax break tools, what the financial impact of that might be?
Co-chairs Reed and Vance, Representative Smith, this isn't just for only those companies that are getting incentives. It could involve a company that wants to locate at this place, and there are no incentives involved, but it's still a very sensitive issue. We'd frankly love to be in the situation where we have so many different companies we're looking at then we probably would have to revisit the incentives at that point. But right now, the issue, the primary issue we're facing is trying to get generate enough business investment and generate as many jobs as we can that are family wage or higher, you know, family wage or above average income jobs.
I still have my question.
That does raise an issue, and I want to make sure for purposes of the record I understand the intent of the additional language shown on page 4, lines 7 and 8 and 9. And I think that the idea here is that the records falling within this exception are those that have to do with
yes.
business opportunities. And I'm a little worried because if you look at the nature of the first of the groups to whom the exception currently applies, it appears that for the most part it's all economic development oriented groups. Am I right there? I see the Business Development Commission, the Business Development Department, the State Department of Ag, that's a little different, the Oregon Growth Account Board, the Port of Portland, and then there will be a rather dramatic expansion to counties and cities and any subdivisions thereof.
Chair Bence, I stand corrected. This is aimed at applicants for investment grants, loans. The problem is when you're in the initial stages, you don't know yet whether or not those incentives are going to go through at that point. They may be discussed, but it may or may not actually happen in the end.
Right, but what I'm trying to get at here is, for purposes of the record, the intent of this amendment is to protect counties, cities, and their subdivisions, governing bodies, in economic development activities, not the much broader scope of things that cities
precisely.
And counties engage in.
Yes, okay. I concur with that.
Okay.
Very much so. This is not to expand it to other areas. This is focused on for economic development purposes.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Further questions? See none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all we have signed up. Is there anyone else that wishes to be heard on Senate Bill 437? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 437 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 179. Zach.
Senate Bill 179 authorizes the Travel Information Council to issue citations for violations of health and safety rules at roadside rest areas managed by the council.
I have one person signed up, Craig Campbell.
Do you know if we're going to meet Friday if there's no floor?
Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Travel Information Council in support of Senate Bill 179. As many of you probably know, the Travel Information Council was granted the ability to manage a group of rest areas as a result of the passage of the JTA House Bill 2001 from the 2009 legislative session. One of the things that didn't happen at that point in time was the ability for Travel Information Council to enforce rules that are passed by the Department of Transportation for the governance of rest areas. These are essentially safety and health type of rules. The Department of Transportation was given the authority to pass such rules also in 2009. What this bill does is it gives authority for the Travel Information Council director to have TIC staff issue citations for violations of those rules. It's the intent of the Travel Information Council to work with the Parks Department to have training, joint training with them, since they do this sort of thing currently, and to work with them to develop a citation process. These citations work just like any other citations that would go to the local county court. The funds that come in from that, for the most part, come back to the general fund. They don't go to TIC. They don't go to ODOT. There's a certain amount of the funds that are taken by statute for a variety of different purposes, just like any other citation. One of the things that I wanted to raise is that we've had some discussions about using this particular bill as a vehicle for expanding the role of TIC in rest areas and perhaps using it as a vehicle to expand the number of rest areas. We've had some very good meetings with the Department of Transportation over the last couple of weeks, and we've decided to have further discussions between now and probably next session before we proceed statutorily if we decide we need to. And so at this point in time, we're going to ask that the committee approve this particular bill as is and move it forward. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have about this particular bill.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Campbell? I have a couple. I'm just curious why the director, why does it read the director of the TIC and any person may issue? I just can't really visualize the director out there handing out citations.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is not likely what will happen, and I think they just wanted to have somebody who had authority. The chances of this director or any other director wanting to be out there to issue citations is very limited, but this is the language that came back from Legislative Council, and I suppose if the Travel Information Council ever found itself where it only had one employee, and I suppose that would be the way that would work. But in truth, though that's the way it's written, that's not the way it will be carried out.
Right. Mr. Chair, I notice that Representative Smith and Representative Widener are not here. Maybe they might want to do some citations.
Maybe they would. Let's move on past that. It says citations to any person for violation of a rule adopted under ORS 366.493, which I didn't bring a copy of, so maybe you can share with us what that is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I apologize, I forgot to print it before I came out. These are rules that are specific to the rest areas. They essentially deal with things like staying more than 24 hours within the rest stop. Actually, I think it's more than 12 hours in the rest stop in any 24-hour period. Starting a fire, littering, it's those sort of things that that are violations under that that statutory provision.
And of course, the correct question is: once vested with this power, can we anticipate that we will have large crowds into court having been cited? I'm just curious what the consequences of this might actually be.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this particular issue TIC is looking at as a last resort. In fact, the ball dock is a good example. We were able to deal with a pretty substantial homeless population without ever having to refer to a citation authority. That's not always going to be the case, but TIC's basic approach is try and deal with things long before they ever get to the point where you really need a citation. On those very rare occasions where you have a chronic problem and you need to use the citations, that's what they will be used for. I would imagine you're not going to see more than three or four of these in a given year if we ever need to give one. But having the authority there is something that we feel that we do need to have in case those situations do arise.
And I take it that state police or I don't know who has that authority now, but I assume any law enforcement officer would have that power as today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, law enforcement does not like to give citations for this sort of rule violation. So it would really be the Department of Transportation. And the Department of Transportation, as a result of the relationship we have with them in these rest areas, don't really come to those rest areas. So there really is no one who does that. Our relationship with law enforcement is that they will enforce criminal violations, but they have to see those violations. And they are very reticent to get involved in rule violations. So really, at this point in time, there is no one to fill this gap.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Campbell is the only one we had signed up for this one. Is that correct, Zach?
Yes, sir.
So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 437. And members of the committee, I think we have, again, exhausted our agenda. So we are adjourned.
And there's no meeting on Friday.
Yeah. Great.